He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day to our listeners on this week's version of Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin, Robin Leach, and Mike Flint. I will start out the show by saying I recently attended this year's 2025 New York Auto Show after not having been to it for 2 or 3 or 4 years.
Really?
Partly because I wasn't really interested in the electric car world, which was emphasized in 2023 at the show. No, excuse me, 2024 when they had the show back. And but this year I decided to go with a couple of friends, and off we went. And it was actually pretty interesting, although I didn't see anything earth-shaking in terms of cars on the future that are going to show up in dealers' showrooms soon, if they're not already there. But
so let me ask you questions here.
Okay.
Who were the manufacturers that were...
Well, I'm going to go through that. I have a list of things here to go through, and I will give you that manufacturer list shortly. There were two big levels. It's always held at the Javits Center in New York City. It was... fully occupied. The two levels were fully occupied. The lower level was an entire level of electric vehicle action. They had put in the lower level, which is where we started, a track which took up the entire floor so that people could experience, have the ride experience in electric vehicles. That is, you as a observer and visitor don't get to drive them, but you do get to ride in them. And it was itself sort of interesting to watch, because they took people around in all the current levels. Well, I don't know whether it was every model of electric vehicle that's now currently available in the United States, but a lot of different ones, which included the VWs, ID4s, and the buses. The buses are the what you want to call the bus, the new bus. The Nissan Ariya was there. Teslas were there. Kias were there. Hyundais were there. Chevy Equinox EVs were there. The Ford Lightning pickup trucks were there. I don't remember whether there was a GMC Sierra electric truck in the group or not. But those all were on this track. So you got in line to take on this ride adventure, and you didn't get to choose necessarily unless you wanted to let a car that you didn't want to go in pass by until one came up and you could let people go ahead of you. But you sort of, at the time you actually got to get in a car, you got what car was waiting for you to get in it before it went around the track.
Let me interrupt. So you were not... So you were just getting a ride in randomly, whatever electric vehicles.
Yes, and you could theoretically await the one. Like if I had done it and I did not get in the line, and I'll tell the listeners why shortly, I would have waited for the Buzz, the VW Buzz, to be available. There were maybe two of those on the track. You know, there weren't a lot of vehicles of any make on the track. There were like two or three, maybe four samples of the electric vehicles. Hyundai and Kia, for example, had a couple of different models. But the first section of the track was an acceleration experience. That is, they went to a starting point, and the driver, every car had its own manufacturer's approved drivers driving the vehicles, was an acceleration run in each of the cars to give you the experience of what electric cars can accelerate at. And it was a, I don't know, I didn't measure the distance. If it was 200 feet, that was probably it. And they would scoot down the track, and then they immediately had to hit the brakes to enter an S-curve experience. And then it went around to another couple of experience levels. And our group watched it for about 20 minutes and decided to move on, because we really wanted to go up to the second level where the manufacturer's displays were. to sit there and watch the demonstration of electric vehicles, I don't know what it was hoping to accomplish in terms of people's desire to go out and run out and buy one. But that was, I'll end on that note. Jay, if you've got any questions, or Mike, you can chime in here before we go to the upper level, which I'm about to do.
Well, I guess it, you know, it was all about the electric experience, right?
Yeah.
The novelty of it all. They've been doing this little track for a few years now. Right?
That's true.
We've seen it before.
Well, they started out initially with individual makers having their own little tracks, which were very short. And this was just done for anybody who wanted to. Like, for example, in an earlier show, years show, Ford had its own test track when the Ford Lightning came out. And there were a bunch of Ford Lightnings ready to line up to take you on a thing. But they were the only manufacturer that had a speedway, straightaway acceleration experience track in a portion of the floor, as opposed to this track, which was basically for anybody, any electric car that was available to be ridden in to show up and be available for the public to get a ride experience, I'll call it.
Yeah, I tend to think that it's just misplaced product.
Energy?
showcasing. Because, yes, acceleration in an EV is pretty incredible, but that is not the selling point. And very few people, especially passengers, really enjoy getting
jolted,
stuck to the back of the seat. In
well, that certainly was happening in that acceleration straightaway, and it didn't last. I don't think it lasted 4 seconds by the time they got down to the one end to the other.
So how many cars were being charged? Where were they charging the cars?
I don't know. There was a center area where some cars parked that were not being used. And, it's interesting. You talk about electric range. We've talked about ad infinitum on our shows and range anxiety and all that kind of thing. This kind of performance action actually drains the battery quickly, but it didn't last 4 or 5 seconds. So I don't know how long the batteries went before they had to retire a particular car to get it recharged. Experienced electric vehicle people are, they all have their different size batteries, and they all have different range on the regular driving circuits, different ranges available. The rest of the track was basically driving around the rest of the track, turns, tight turns, other turns, and
okay. So let's move on to the second floor. Let's move on to the
cars. Let's go to the second floor, where there was VW, Subaru, Nissan, Toyota, Kia, Hyundai, Ford, Stellantis/Dodge, and Chevrolet. Rolls Royce and Bentley, and Porsche. Displays, and probably a couple others that I haven't got on my list here. They might come to me. They all had quite large displays, the bigger manufacturers. Subaru had a huge display, for example. So did Toyota. Ford and Chevrolet had all the displays were pretty big. Bentley and Rolls were single vehicle displays. Lamborghini was had a display, and they had all their current model cars there for you to look at.
So what struck you?
Here's what struck me. I did say earlier on this as a start that nothing really was exciting me from the standpoint of wanting to think to go to a dealer and test drive anything. Well, that's not true. You know, the Equinox, I looked at the Equinox Chevrolet EV pretty closely, and I actually filled out a consumer computer screen at that lot, and I have got a $50 certificate if I go test drive an Equinox EV, at a dealer nearest me. And, of course, they take all your information down if you allow yourself to fill out these things on the computer screen. And the next thing you know, you get home from the show and your email is full with solicitations from a dealer. In this case, the dealer nearest me is in Torrington, Connecticut. And I did give them that name, and I now have at least four emails from a salesperson trying to get me to come down and test drive the Chevrolet Equinox EV,
well,
which I might go do.
But at least they're trying to sell EVs. Remember, we went down and to drive a Chevy Bolt years ago, and the car was hidden in back of the lot. So at least Chevy or GM is trying to sell electric cars now.
Well, that seems to be the case. If you were willing to give your name to one of the reps on the floor, yes, you can be connected and contacted, and I may take myself down to do that, but I'm not in a rush to do it. The Chevrolet Equinox EV has been a very well received in the publications. Talked about in articles on it as a reasonably priced and looks to me like very competent electric vehicle for the sort of the SUV style vehicles that are now electric. Whether it's really great or not is up to the public to figure out.
So how do you explain that Honda, which sells...
Oh, Honda was there. I'm sorry. Did I say Honda?
The same vehicle.
Yeah.
Sells twice as many Prologues as Chevy sells Equinoxes.
You know, I don't know what's driving people to buy particular models and all that. I don't know what it's pricing. I don't know what it's dealer availability, availability of vehicles. I haven't followed the sales records, which you are implying you've been doing, which is interesting to know. I don't know the cost of each of these individual vehicles, lines of vehicles either, and that may or not be driving some of the sales at particular dealerships and makes as opposed to others.
The prices for the Equinox and the Prologue are very comparable, and I haven't looked at the...
I think they start in the 30s and can go into the 40s.
Yeah, it's in the 40s or right under 50,000.
And I believe they still have the so-called tax credit benefits available at each of those lines. I'm not sure whether they've run out or not. I think those benefits have actually been expanded, and I believe they've been expanded to use electric vehicle sales, too. But I can't answer your question for the public to hear. Yes, Honda was there, and I think that covers most of the lines that were there, and they had a nice display of their vehicles as well.
So in the crowd, who's still attending car shows?
Good question. The time frame that we were there was between 11 and 2:30-ish. And I felt that it was very thinly attended in that time frame. The lines for getting in the various ride options, and we must say that Jeep Mountain was there outside before you got into the inside of the building. And they had their usual display, and it was almost a walk-on get in a Jeep capability. When I went by it a couple of times, I've done that, and that's like an amusement park ride where you have a steep incline, a steep decline, and some highly angled other options that the Jeeps are going to crawl over as you ride around in them. And they were all Wranglers. I believe they were all basically Wrangler vehicles, although they did have a couple of Cherokees there, but they were parked, and I didn't see them on the track when I went by.
Hey, let me interrupt you. Speaking of Wranglers, and I was thinking about the fact that they're so oversized and bloated these days, when I was in Europe last week or a couple of weeks ago, I did see a couple of the new... Suzuki Jimmys or whatever they were called, the little SUVs.
And didn't they look great?
It looks awesome. It absolutely looks awesome. And it just also looks like it's the right size for that type of off-road.
I saw some Suzukis in Italy, too, when I was there recently. And I thought Suzuki was sort of not really present anywhere. It's certainly not present in the U.S., but boy, they are great-looking vehicles. And I saw a couple of, I'm trying to think of a couple other models of vehicles in Europe that I saw that I looked, thought looked very good. Oh, you know, the Mitsubishis. And I think, oh, Mitsubishi was at the auto show as well. Now, they have a very thin lineup of vehicles, so they did not have a very big display. But, when I discussed briefly the driving in Italy in a recent show, and what I noted was, you know, as you know, Jay, because the streets are much smaller, the side streets in the cities are much narrower than they are in the U.S., the cars over there are generally, except for the big luxury vehicles that ply the roads, on the whole, a smaller scale of cars, except for the, you know, the periodic, you know, you see a few Americans. I saw the Mustang, and I said on the show I saw a Ford Raptor pickup and a Ford F-150 pickup, and as well as a couple of Rams, which are too big to go down some of the smaller streets in the cities, not to mention trying to turn a corner at an intersection. but the predominance of the sale, the sizes of those cars are smaller and actually, you know, very appropriate, yes?
Well, so I was reading a few articles about safety and trying to compare, you know, stats of crashes and fatalities here in the U.S. and versus Europe and other parts of the world. But one of the stories I was reading was about the size or actually the weight of vehicles and the fact that vehicles in our country are 20% heavier on average than they are in Europe and 40% heavier than they are in Japan. And you know, there's an accepted reality that if you are in a bigger vehicle, your chances of not getting hurt or surviving a crash are much better than in a smaller vehicle.
Jay,
the problem with that is that people keep getting in bigger and bigger vehicles, but your vehicle is only as big as your next door neighbor's vehicle is small. But if you're crashing vehicles of the same weight, you know you're not marking any points, really. And it's the whole concept of what they call partner vehicles. So you may survive a crash better in a heavy SUV or pickup truck, but what are you going to do for damage or who are you going to kill that is riding in a compact or subcompact?
Well, okay, so I was driving a Ford Panda hybrid to go to this point, and I was looking at the interior, and I did not see the plethora of airbags in that car vehicle. I don't think there was an airbag in the passenger front compartment of a Ford Panda, which is, and I'm not sure where they are in the European cars, Jay, and I don't know whether you spent time observing what isn't or is in, but to go to the weight situation, as you know, all the cars in our country have airbags, side airbags, they've got front airbags, they've got sometimes roof airbags, they sometimes have knee airbags, all of which create weight. I don't know anything about the rear doors, whether they're side impact bars in the European cars that are built just for European use and aren't importable into the U.S. or not. And plus the size, of course, of the European cars is you had smart Ford 2s, you had the little Cinquecento Fiats, the tiny cars. I don't know whether I'd want to be caught on the autostradas in those if something were to happen, because the larger trucks, even though they're smaller than our giant tractor trailers, are still large and often carrying heavy loads, which makes the weight greater. And then you've got the periodic Mercedes and the big BMWs and all that also going down the autostrada. But what I don't know is what the safety build requirements are for European cars built for European roads only.
Well,
and, all of which in the U.S. adds a considerable amount of weight to go back to your statistic of being, you know, 40% heavier than the Japanese cars and 20% heavier than, you know, European cars type of situation. Partly because of the added components within the bodies of the cars, besides the size.
I think as far as safety features are concerned, I'm going to be careful here because I know that the Europeans, for one, have some of their safety features are more stringent than you know, some regulations are more stringent than they are here.
But is it national for the Europeans or is it country by country? And you, what do you drive over there? You drive a Ford something, right? A three-cylinder Ford. Do you know if it has a steering wheel airbag in it?
Yeah, all these cars have airbags.
I didn't note that in the Fiat Panda, so I can't tell you that it did or didn't.
I'm sure all the cars in Europe have multitude of airbags like this.
Well, they don't. No, they don't have a multitude. Not the way you look up in the roof and you don't see any side roof airbags. And the Panda certainly did not have it. And
all
they did
We'll fact check airbags, okay?
Well, but I don't think we need to for our listeners. You and I can fact check it for our points, but because our listeners mostly are listening because they're driving here in the U.S.
Correct. So we can talk about safety here and driving on our roads. I was reading about, and I'm going from one thing to another here.
That's all right.
Speed
so cameras. So is the clock.
And started looking at what states were speed cameras legal and others not. And there was a whole article in Jalopnik, I believe, about Maryland issuing 48,000 speeding tickets in 2 months' time. And if you do the quick math, that's 800 a day, I believe.
On what roads? Interstates?
So they are limited by law, by state law. They're limited to putting speed cameras in areas that are danger zones. So I believe they can put them in school zones.
Zones.
And also in all the work zones. And that's what they do, like on I-95, where I have seen speed cameras in Maryland. And they should, you know, honestly, you know, people should slow down. I have a conflicting interests here. I mean, I do think speed cameras serve a great purpose. On the other hand, I'm the first driver to probably drive faster than most of the people on the road. I do believe in speed cameras.
Let's go to Connecticut on that, if I can interrupt you, because Connecticut's discussing it in the legislature right now.
It is. Speed cameras are legal in Connecticut.
About allowing towns to possibly put in speed cameras, red light cameras, or maybe not, well, they're with stoplights, but speed cameras in the towns to try to control.
Well, right now, Robin, the towns are allowed only if it is approved by a town meeting.
Correct.
Because they recently had that in Kent where they said no way.
Well, Sharon has been investigating it too because of the various places in Sharon, especially coming down the hill from either south or north.
So far,
these trucks come down and barrel down. I see it daily when I'm around Sharon. They come down the hill very quickly from the Lakeville, you know, the north side, because it's a long hill. And they just don't put their brakes on.
The only town I know, forget about the cities, I'm sure they have plenty there, is Washington, Connecticut is the only town I'm aware of that they have approved speed cameras in so far.
Okay.
Everybody else is kind of staying away from it.
It is on the discussion table. I know because I've read something about it, but not specifics beyond what you've just given us, which is nice. So... agreeing with Jay that we probably should drive slower than we do, I have more or less resigned myself to not going over 7 or 8 miles an hour over the posted speed limits, and I find it a very satisfying self-limiting feature of my driving because I find I do not either come up against cars that are going slower or have cars speeding down past me. If I'm going roughly that fast on 684, for example, I've discussed it on the show before, and on Route 22, where the posted state speed limit is 55, and I do 62, and the posted speed limit on 684, I think, is 65, and I do 72. And it's very interesting that it smooths out my driving from the standpoint that I'm not accelerating or deep braking a lot, but I'm going along at a fairly consistently capable of maintaining steady speed in these zones if the traffic isn't interfering with that.
So do you use cruise control? Or not?
I do. Every chance I get, I have on cruise control at those speeds. 22 is a little bit more difficult because it is a two-lane road, and there is more periodic traffic coming at you and or in front of you to make you have to go off the cruise control, which obviously disarms itself the minute you touch the brakes.
So
on 684, I can most of the time I can stay on cruise control for 70 or 80% of the distance that I travel on that when I'm traveling on a daily basis.
Oh my gosh, I could not. So I'm the guy here who believes in automated in driving, right?
Yep.
And you've been pretty much opposed to it.
Yep.
For a long time, and yet you're the one who drives on cruise control. And
that's automated. But my hands are on the wheel. I'm talking about your automated driving, self-driving cars.
Cruise control is part of that automation.
Correct. But I don't have smart cruise control the way we're talking about the cruise controls that are on many of the new cars today that are self-braking and actually will start back up again, right, if the traffic... I mean, this is the funny thing about those radar cruise controls. The trouble with those is that if you're talking away in the car and you're thinking you start out at 72, you often find yourself suddenly only going 55 because the car in front of you is down to 55, which means you've forgotten to go around that car if you're on the Mass Pike, for example. But it is a very safe cruise control, and that works fairly well. And as you know, they have emergency braking capability in them if the car is really slowing down in front of you and you haven't paid attention.
But all the same technology, right? I mean,
right.
It
is the same technology, Jay, and that part of it, I must say, I accept to the degree that it works. But the idea of being able to let go of the steering wheel and just sort of read a book or something while you're going down the road is just so foreign to me ever wanting to do that. And maybe it can happen in the towns with the self-driving taxis experimenting with. As far as trying to be on the highway and watching people possibly go by you with their hands off the wheel while they're on their phone or something like that, it's just foreign to me to be able to think about doing.
I know you're a big fan of you mentioned the vehicle again, the VWID Buzz. So when you go to L.A. the next time, are you going to Uber your way around in a driverless Volkswagen ID. Buzz?
Well, I know that they're going to be used by... Well, who's using them? It's not Uber.
Volkswagen has a deal with Uber.
Right.
Interestingly, Uber actually works with Waymo.
Right, Waymo, I think, is going to have the buses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I may have to fly out to L.A. just to do it, Jay, because I haven't been to L.A. in a long time.
Yeah, you know.
But they won't show up in Lakeville and our listening area anytime soon.
Well,
if ever. The buses will. I have yet to be able to test drive a Buzz at a dealership because they don't have one to test drive. At least this is now a 3-month-old comment because I haven't tried recently to go down and do it.
I think you should do it. I think you should get an ID.
I have talked to, just for listeners, the Buzz is, those of you who know what we're talking about, I think it's a very interesting vehicle because it's a successor to my Eurovan, which I absolutely love and still have. And it's 2000, but it's a 2000 version. It's old by any standards. They're still around Europe. Very popular, I think, for cargo van use at least. I don't know how many have them for passenger use, although I saw a few in Italy. The Buzz is intriguing. It is only electric, so it doesn't intrigue me for owning at the moment because you can't go more than probably 250 or 275 miles before you need a charge. And the charging is getting better, listeners. You who have listened to this show have heard me criticize the charging time as being too much for me to want to ever have an electric car on a let's say all day cross country or all week cross country trip when I try to go 600 to 800 miles a day.
Hey Robin, before we get booted off, Scoo, have you heard about the new Slate pickup truck?
I have. I haven't read anything about it. I think I saw something on the TV about it.
Okay, we'll revisit that next week.
We've come to the end of the line here on another Car Keys with Robin, Jay, and Mike on Robin Hood Radio. Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.